I want to drink your blood.
Dracula, don't be silly. This isn't real blood. It's the fantastic blood bath bubble bath from Bubble Genius.
What?
And like all their great bath and body products, it's 100% vegan and full of yummy smelling suds.
Well then, I want to drink your tub.
Oh, silly Drac. It may smell good, but it doesn't taste good.
I want to wash your back.
Blood bath, bubble bath, and all kinds of spooky, sudsy stuff. This Halloween, only from Bubble Genius.
www.bubblegenius.com.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
What's on your mind? The era of big government is over. You want to cut the line?
I want to change the sentiment. We're running away from ourselves. And I know we can score points that way. I was a principal architect of that campaign strategy, right along with you, Judge. But we're here now. Tomorrow night we do an immense thing. We have to say what we feel. That government, no matter what its failures in the past, and in times to come, for that matter, government can be a place where people come together. And where no one gets left behind. No one gets left behind. An instrument of good. I have no trouble understanding why the line tested well, Josh. But I don't think that means we should say it. I think that means we should change it. I think so, too. What do you think, Josh?
I make it a point never to disagree with Toby when he's right, Mr. President.
Then you and Sam get your people together and get to work.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Pleasure is just a click away with radio as your guest. There's no quicker way, so click away. Radio does the rest.
If we want to win elections in November and keep our country moving forward, if we want to earn the privilege to lead, my message is this. It's time for Democrats to grow a backbone and stand up for what we believe.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is September 6th, 2012. This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez. Brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. Our favorite soap, your favorite soap, everyone's favorite bath and body product.
I realize I've been on this show long enough now to where the holiday-themed commercials for Bubble Genius are recycling.
I know.
They're repeating.
I know. It's the... God, when Paula sent me that ad today and said it was Halloween coming up, I wasn't so alarmed by the recycling of, yeah, that's their prerogative.
Right.
But it's the fact that Halloween is just around the corner.
Shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's literally 2 months to the day, to the election. Today's September 6th. We're recording the show on September 6th. The election is on November 6th.
There's always been a certain amount irony to the idea, or actually more like coincidence to the idea that they schedule the election right after Halloween.
I know. And you know what? Honestly, it really shouldn't be happening on a Tuesday. I mean, this is kind of boilerplate voting rights kind of stuff. They ought to be doing it the weekend before, or just extending it out 3-4 weeks. I mean, early voting should be happening everywhere. I mean, literally for the several weeks before the election, at least, you should be able to walk in at your convenience and cast a ballot.
Yep.
But I imagine the the political press would just go bat crap all over the place. Because, I mean, you like that final night of coverage. In this case, it would be an ongoing process that they really wouldn't be at liberty to cover. Because if they did, they would fall into that trap, that 2000 election trap, where you're covering the returns as they come in, and then that skews the results. And people think, oh, okay, well, I guess, you know, candidate X is way up.
Right.
Why bother voting?
Sure.
And so if you remember, in 2000, there was all kinds of, I mean, that's everything changed in that 2000 election, where they were reporting returns before the polls were closed. And so that was kind of affecting how people went in and voted. And after that, it was...
Oh, I live in California now. Yeah. Nobody gives a crap about my vote.
Yeah. I live in Hawaii, for God's sake.
Right. You don't
Nobody.
Matter at all. You may as well just give it up. Are you voting in Pennsylvania?
No. I'm fully a Hawaii resident right now.
Interesting.
Yeah. I got my driver's license. I got my photo ID ready. In fact, I voted in the primary, which was a couple of weeks ago. And there was all kinds of weirdness, of course, where none of the polling places in town here actually had any ballots or voting booths. So we went in there to vote at, I don't know, like 9 o'clock in the morning, and none of the voting materials were there. So we had to leave, and just in a big huff, because of course we're thinking, holy crap. I mean, the people who have to work today are just never going to be able to vote now. I mean, and especially the people who are voting at their leisure, who they just say, okay, oh, you know what? I forgot today's election day. I'll pop in on my way to work. And, of course, There's no ballots. No ballots to be had anywhere. So there was a big stink here. But, I mean, regardless, no one gives a crap about Hawaii. It really doesn't. Everyone knows how we're going to vote. I mean, we're gonna end up electing another Democrat to the Senate. Former Governor Linda Lingle is the Republican. She's got no chance in hell. I mean, that's even, I mean, Nate Silver. I looked at Nate Silver's numbers. So the Democratic Senate seat is safe in Hawaii. And then the Democrat who's actually running for that seat, her House seat is going to be replaced by another Democrat. So, I mean, this is like it's like the entire thing. Once you reach the coast of California, it's just irrelevant. No one cares. Lots of stuff to talk about, though, this week. Obviously, there's a lot of convention things. And some Republican, you know, poopy diaper baby behavior I want to talk about too. Before any of it though, for God's sake, you want to talk about a couple of bits of good news right on the cusp of the president getting up and speaking tonight. Now, if you're hearing this, we're going to be posting this show probably right as the president's speaking, or maybe a little bit prior to that. So you're probably hearing this show after the president speaks. And we'll get to another reason why the recording of the show, not in real time, becomes a problem. But right as the president's about to speak.
Oh, my God, the president was hit with a pie tonight while he was speaking. Did you see that? Let's just assume. Let's just make up assumptions now.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, my God. Zell Miller showed up and he was carrying spitballs. No, I mean, for God's sake, the economy added 210,000 jobs. This month, big jobs report higher than expectations, which is really good.
Yeah, it's a nice little kick in the ass to Republicans.
I mean, it's still not keeping up with you know, population increases and things like that. It's still not quite good enough to. Oh, I'm sorry, it's 201,000, not 210,000. Fact checker's getting on top of me.
There you go.
201,000 new jobs in August, which is way, way, way better than expected. It's still not keeping up. I mean, they need to be adding, I don't know, what, 300,000, 400,000 jobs to really make a serious dent in unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, what else can really happen? I mean, for God's sake, I keep going back to the statistic. I mean, this is a big one. I was surprised President Clinton didn't mention it last night. But, I mean, one of the reasons why job growth is slow is, first of all, we're cutting back on public sector jobs. As state, local, federal jobs are actually going down. And so that's hurting the unemployment number. That's hurting the job creation number. Plus, corporations are sitting on record cash assets. Something like $2 trillion, the highest number since 1959. I mean, no wonder Mitt Romney wants to go back to the 50s. Because, I mean, that's the last time corporations had just an enormous amount of money that they're just not spending. Yeah. I mean, businesses are basically making employees do more work for less pay, figuring out ways to get people to multitask more so than they ever had before for the same pay rate. And where are they going to go, after all? I mean, what are they going to do? Quit? Where are they going to find another job? Good luck. So they're being taken advantage of. And that's a couple of reasons why, you know, unemployment still remains kind of high while the rest of the economy is actually doing kind of well. And that brings me to the next bit of good news, which is the NASDAQ. I think the NASDAQ finished at its highest number since the year 2000, which if you remember the year 2000, that was pretty damn good for the NASDAQ.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have a couple of pretty strong economic indicators here leading into the president's speech. So I don't know. And, you know, I brought this up yesterday, and we're going to get into the Clinton address from last night and all the rest of it. But what exactly, Chez, do you think the Republicans can do at this point to, I mean, they just don't have another card to play. I mean, if you remember 4 years ago, they came out of the Democratic convention where the Democrats were flying high, big stadium speech by the president, huge momentum, and then John McCain drops the Sarah Palin bombshell, the big quote-unquote game change that actually stole away some of that initiative and brought it over to the Republican side. Mitt Romney doesn't have any cards like that to play.
I was just noticing that, you know, obviously, because I've been doing so much stuff for Banter and I've had so much other work, I haven't had a lot of time this political season to really get sort of down into doing heavy, heavy blogging the way I did last time around. Mm-hmm. But it did kind of dawn on me looking back at the kind of, you know, if you want to call it my coverage of the 2008 campaign. Uh-huh. I really didn't pick things up until McCain picked Palin. After that, it was like 20 posts a day because it was so insane. It was such great, you know, for, as we used to call it in the business, great TV.
Yeah.
As we used to call it in the business. I love that I say that. Like, I'm demystifying something for people.
Well, it became sort of a renewal of the George W. Bush trend, which was just as soon as you get on top of one thing, some other bit of insanity drops in your lap. Like, as you get on top of, some sort of botching of the definition of the vice president, suddenly then you have Sarah Palin, I don't know what, adding the pals around with domestic terrorists, some other, the Katie Couric interview, then the Charlie Gibson interview, and it was just an ongoing cavalcade of stuff to sink your teeth into. But regardless, what that did, I mean, it kind of sucked the air out of the Democratic convention. And
there's always the potential for an October surprise, but admittedly, the Romney campaign has, there haven't really been a lot of surprises, aside from what he flip-flops a lot. He's awkward. You know, he makes another gaffe. It really does. I'm not saying that incompetence on the part of the Romney campaign is enough to cost it the vote. We all know how voters are. Enough to cost the election, pardon me. But certainly, they have been so inept, and I really can't see them pulling out something huge out of their asses.
No, really. I mean, what are they relying on? They're relying on some shaky number from Medicare, which Paul Ryan actually proposed himself in his own budget. Bill Clinton made that perfectly clear last night.
They're hoping the economy's terrible. That's it. That's all they have.
Yeah, that's right. And they really had their fingers crossed for this jobs number because they really wanted to steal that thunder. They really wanted to be able to say, oh, yeah, well, President delivered a great speech. President Obama would be Thursday night delivering a great speech. Oh, but look at the jobs number. Look how it sucks. Because remember, a couple of months ago, there were a couple of really crappy jobs numbers that came out. And everyone was kind of gnashing their teeth wondering, are we slipping back into recession? Is this going to be some sort of double dip or dead cat bounce or whatever the hell you want to call it?
Dead cat bounce.
I learned that from the spazzy white guys in Lower Manhattan on CNBC.
I've never even heard that term.
Yeah, that's when a stock tanks out and then it goes up a little bit and then it falls again. That's called the dead cat bounce.
Terrific.
It's really classy guys. I don't know what else. I mean, and as you watch, Paul Ryan is actually becoming shakier and more awkward and weird. I mean, he was doing something He gave like a pep talk at University of Miami football game or something back in the locker room and completely bungled that. And then
I genuinely don't think that he expected the kind of backlash that he got from his speech and from all the other things he said that have been a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
You know, I really think that he figured that he would just say whatever he wanted and kind of overwhelm them with nonsense, and people would just, you know, the fact-checking people or the press would just – they would be so completely inundated, and so their jaws would be so far into the ground that they would just give up. And instead, no, what he got was he got a hell of a lot of pushback from a lot of very objective places and from mainstream news organizations that don't generally – that are just completely paranoid about being seen taking any kind of side.
Yeah. And so their response was, we're just not going to pay attention to the fact checkers. Those guys are irrelevant. And, God, who had the great – someone – it was either on Twitter or it was John Stewart. I think it was John Stewart who said, why is it suddenly there are separate fact-checking organizations? Why aren't journalists just doing that? I mean, why do we have this other group of people over here as the fact checkers?
That's it. Exactly. Journalists are fact checkers. That's their job. That's a great,
course.
That's a terrific point. It's one I've actually made before a long time ago. There's no need for separate fact checking organizations that journalists have to report to, you know, and it's still, you know, even though obviously places like the New York Times and the Post and all that are willing to sort of come down on Ryan for his mendacity. There's something kind of – I mean, it's great that they're able to sort of point fingers at the fact checkers and say, look, these independent fact checkers have done this research. So in some way, it kind of lets them off the hook. At least they're willing to say it. But it sucks that they get let off the hook,
that they really have
to point to someone else. Again, they have to point to somebody besides themselves and say, look, there is this independent thing that says that this is wrong, when in reality, it's a journalist's job to say, no, this is wrong.
That's right. That's right. And it's just because the conservative talking points have really poisoned the well for journalism. And I think it's – and I don't want to just blame conservatives, because journalists could have just told them to piss off and continue to do their job as journalists. But what they've done is they've kind of, just crumbled under pressure to – conservative liberal media bias crap.
They've been doing that for years, though. Yeah, I mean, I've written about this a bunch of times, you know, throughout – the history of my long and somewhat notorious career, you know, there have been a lot of times in almost every newsroom that I've worked in where it has either been whispered or it's been somebody came right out and said it, including me, by the way, as a manager at one point, that that producers, writers, editors have to be sort of constantly aware of making sure that they're not biased to the left.
Yeah.
Which kind of bothers me in a way, because I actually knew as many Republicans working in news as I did liberals, as I did Democrats. So to automatically make the assumption that the news is going to skew left, I think is ridiculous. And once again, I think is a product of all the demonization that's come from the right.
Yeah. We're going to get into Bill Clinton's speech after a quick break, back after this.
Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Bring me back in shadow.
Yeah, on the jobs front, not only did the economy create over 200,000 new jobs for August, but I was talking about the dismal jobs numbers that came out a couple of months ago. And in fact, the July gain of just 10,000 jobs revised upwards to 173,000. So that's I mean, the number in itself, 173,000, isn't great. I mean, it's anything below 200,000 is kind of still a little bit tepid. But to pop the number up, I mean, the number that everyone was kind of crapping their pants over, 10,000, to pop that up to 173,000, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. That shows that I think that relates the proper trend that we're talking about here, which is basically an even keel. I mean, if you kind of draw a line through sort of the average or the median job creation month by month, it's pretty much around the 200,000 number. I mean, not going to get a whole lot of variation beyond that. And so I think it's just a matter now of somehow convincing the these businesses who are, I guess, waiting for the confidence fairy to come along and say, hey, look, everything's okay. You know, shy of that, I don't know what else is going to what can happen necessarily to create some additional jobs. But, you know, we'll see. The president spoke last night, President Clinton, that is. And on Wednesday night, I want to just make that clear because now we're getting all scrambled in terms of days and things like that. By the way, once again, last week, just as soon as we finished the show, just as soon as we posted the show, what the hell? Suddenly, the most phenomenal bit of stupid in recent Republican history occurred on television. That was
are you talking about Clint Eastwood?
Clint Eastwood, of course.
I actually thought that was brilliant performance art. That was Andy Kaufman level performance art. It really was. For a show that was as boring and scripted and political kabuki as a convention, and certainly the Republican convention was this year, he was a couple moments of tightrope walking, dangerous brilliance.
Yeah. Yeah, I really didn't know what was going to happen from moment to moment. I mean,
that's what I mean. I loved every single second of it. Was it Jay Carney or no? It wasn't Jay Carney. It was one of Obama's press people who said that he's referring all questions about Eastwood's speech to Salvador Dali, which was the best answer I've ever heard.
You know, I kept watching it, thinking, is this guy drunk? Is he having a stroke? What's going on here? And I guess, you know, if you remove it from the realm of politics, if this had been like some sort of Hollywood roast or award ceremony, I think it would have been okay.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that the moment of stupid, the mistake, was allowing him to get up there and just ramble, and to put him just before the speech, the speech by your nominee, the biggest night in Mitt Romney's life.
Yeah.
And it was trumped by an 82-year-old guy talking to a chair for 15 minutes.
That's right, because what was everyone talking about the next day? They weren't talking about Mitt Romney's speech or anything. I don't think anyone remembers a damn thing Mitt Romney said last Thursday night.
You know what I remember really well that I noticed very carefully and was kind of like stunned by? Watching him do the walkout. He had two expressions.
Oh, yeah.
One was sort of the big smile. The other one was the, hey, there you are. You know, that was all he did. He's like, you know, big uh-huh. smile, big smile. Hey, there you uh-huh. are. You. Yeah. I know you. I know you. You know, the old Saturday Night Live swimming sketch.
That's right. And it's funny you notice that, because I noticed the same thing. I mean, the last thing you want to do is make Mitt Romney like walk a rope line on national television with lights and weird cameras with wide lenses.
Look like the dork that he is.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, those Steadicams and those handheld cameras all have really wide lenses, which kind of makes everything look kind of like through its fisheye lens or something like that. And when you get really up close to Romney, who's got like an enormous head already. I mean, the guy's got a gigantic, bulbous, like watermelon-shaped head. It, suddenly, through like a wide lens, it looks twice as big. And then there's like the glaring, like the handheld camera lights too. So it's just like, and then he's smiling and his eyes are really big and buggy and he's shaking hands with people who he clearly doesn't know and looking really stiff as if he's got some sort of back brace or something on. And walking down
exactly.
And shaking hands and looking really, really awkward.
Right. And again, that was it. Those were the two facial expressions. And he really did. Go back and watch somewhere. It's got to be somewhere on YouTube or something.
Yeah, yeah.
He has two facial expressions as he comes out. It's none of it exudes confidence, first of all. Mm-hmm. Not even – and I'm not talking cool. You know, you and I have discussed this before. You know, I've said the Democrats, a lot of times, especially their better politicians, seem to have a sort of lock on cool. But cool is not necessarily the most important thing.
Yeah.
But confident is. And Mitt Romney doesn't look confident. On his way out there, he was – really, there were the two expressions. There was the big sort of startled smile and then the, hey, there you are. The wow, okay, I'm pointing at
you.
Somebody off screen that you can't see.
Yeah. And he really is. I think Mitt Romney's fatal flaw is the fact that he's an executive. He's a behind-the-scenes guy.
You know, by the way, I think I have a better term. Not just, hey, there you are. It was, oh, you. That was it. It's like the kind of pointing at somebody and doing, oh, you, there you are.
Oh, you're, no, it's like this. Oh, you're here. I can't believe you're here. Welcome. You know, it's just like this. This weird greeting, this surprise greeting.
He's a suburban guy in the early 70s welcoming you to, you know, he and his wife's home and instructing you to put your keys in the glass bowl over there.
Yeah, right. He hands you a, you know, a fruit punch beverage in one of those plastic holders with the paper cup in the middle of it.
He's Kevin Kline in the ice storm. Just go put your keys over there in that bowl and we're going to pick them out a little bit later.
He's Brick Tamblyn putting the butter in the toaster.
Brick Tamblyn, that's good. I like it. Yeah, that's it. Perfect. Yes, he is Brick Tamblyn.
Some people say I'm mentally retarded. But yeah, I mean, no one remembered what the hell he said in his speech. I mean, I'd like to actually survey Republicans if you're listening to this show. Comment in the comments if you remember.
I remember that it was genuinely, and I'm not kidding, it was very, very boring. There really was nothing to it. And you know what? I may not be coming down on the side of the Republicans pretty much at all anymore, simply because, as I've written many times, they've allowed their extremist, anti-intellectualist factional fringe to completely take over the party. But look, you know what? I love a good speech as much as the next guy, even if I don't necessarily agree with it. And I'm always willing to give props when somebody gets up there and just knocks it out of the park and gives a quality speech. And his was not. Not at all. I mean, it really wasn't memorable. You know, one of the things that I compare his speech to Ann Romney's, to his wife's. And what's interesting is there's something that came out today that said that, that you know, they broke it down and did crunch the numbers and all that other fun stuff, some sort of a formula that they have. And apparently Ann Romney's speech was on the level of a fifth grader. And it's funny because I went back and read the excerpts that they're talking about, and I'm looking at it. It's very short sentences, very choppy, very, you know, it's very easily, very easily understood, like you're talking to a child.
Yeah.
Michelle Obama's was on the level of a 12th grader, which basically, when it comes to giving political speeches, is about as good as you're going to get.
Yeah, yeah. And most major newspapers are written for 8th graders.
Yeah.
And they're written at about that level. So, I mean, it's to be regarded as having a 12th grade speech, that's not too bad. But, I mean, it was also the way Ann Romney spoke. And, I don't like to necessarily pick on the wives or the kids, but she also spoke very slowly and deliberately, like, you effing idiots.
Yeah, here's the quote. They've got the quote here. And honestly, just, you know, I'm not even going to do any inflection. Just listen to the way this reads. This man will not fail. This man will not let us down. This man will lift up America. Look into your hearts. This is our country. This is our future. These are our children and grandchildren. You can trust Mitt. He loves America. He will take us to a better place, just as he took me home safely from that dance. Give him that chance. Give America that chance. That's it.
It was a maximum of 5 words per sentence, maybe?
Yeah, it's like, precisely.
God, you know what? There were more numbers in President Clinton's speech, conversely, last night than I think there are numbers in Paul Ryan's budget. I mean, and you want to talk about...
Only somebody like Clinton can sell that, though. Yeah. Unfreaking believable.
Yeah. I mean, it really was. It was a masterful piece of work. And I promised we were going to talk about it in this segment, but we're going to have to wait. We're going to have to hold Clinton to the next segment. But we'll take a quick break and come back and talk about Bill Clinton's speech right after this. Yeah, nothing's working today. I'm pressing the buttons and nothing's happening. Hey, show's brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. Go and buy all of your bath and body products from them. And they've got all your favorite holidays covered with various kinds of soaps and appropriate shapes and fresh scents and things like that. Here's the latest word from Bubble Genius.
I want to drink your blood.
Dracula, don't be silly. This isn't real blood. It's the fantastic blood bath bubble bath from Bubble Genius.
What?
And like all their great bath and body products, it's 100% vegan and full of yummy smelling suds.
Well then, I want to drink your tub.
Oh, silly Drac, it may smell good, but it doesn't taste good.
I want to wash your back.
Bloodbath, bubble bath, and all kinds of spooky, sudsy stuff. This Halloween, only from Bubble Genius.
www.bubblegenius.com.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
You get a big discount if you type in Bob and Chez as your promo code when you purchase things from BubbleGenius.com. 15% off your entire order. That's a massive savings, especially if you're buying a lot of stuff. So,
by Grabthar's hammer, what a savings.
That's right. Now, the other thing that we didn't get a chance to talk about last week, because we recorded the show before the Thursday night festivities at the Republican convention, was something that I noticed during the Mitt Romney biopic, the little video documentary about Mitt Romney and his family life and sort of Mitt Romney behind the scenes, you know, where he's plugged into the Borg collective and things like that. There was a candid scene where they're all playing grab ass in the kitchen at one of the Romney kitchens.
Mitt and his sons?
Yeah, Mitt and his sons, and I think Ann Romney's in there, and they're all screwing around in the kitchen. They're all, like, milling around in the kitchen, and it's supposed to show that Mitt Romney's spontaneous and funny and jovial and all those things. And and I should note, it's one of their many kitchens. I mean, they have several kitchens, the Romneys. So it's one of their kitchens, and they're down there, and one of the Romney kids, we'll just call him Tag. I guess it's Tag is one of the Romney kids, goes over to the stove, and they've got
Tag,
one of these.
You have Tag, Mitt. His other kids are called Bat, Ball, Bass.
Exactly. He named all of his kids after recess activities.
Dodge.
So he goes over to Tag, goes over to the stove, and they've got one of these high-tech stoves with a big sort of stainless steel vent over top of it and everything. Okay. It's really high-end stuff, of course. And he points out that the light above the stove had burned out, and Mitt Romney had replaced the little stove light with a gigantic, well, it must have been like a 120-watt light bulb in Kenda. It's like a big bulbous incandescent. It might have actually been one of those vanity mirror bulbs that are like spheroid, you know, like the big round bulb. Put it in there.
It's like an airplane landing light.
That's right. And he explains that it's so bright that people can't cook because they're blinded by this gigantic, inappropriately replaced light bulb. And so Mitt Romney's solution to this problem is not to go out and get maybe
is to have a Mexican come in and change the light bulb.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that would be the obvious solution for someone like Mitt Romney.
Kill a Mexican and smear his blood over it so that it darkens the bulb.
Well, you think what he'd do is replace the light bulb with the appropriate light bulb, the light bulb that's designed to go into that socket. But instead, this is Mitt Romney's problem solving. He takes a piece of tinfoil and some duct tape and hangs it off of the edge of the stove vent so that the light is shielded from people's eyes. I am not kidding. This is the actual explanation. The guy, Tag or Dodge or whatever his name was, pointed out the tinfoil, and he actually said the word duct tape. So rather than actually solving the problem the correct way, Mitt Romney takes an inappropriate light bulb, puts it in the fixture, basically the wrong solution to the problem, and then masks over that solution with something that a four-year-old would do. Oh, his light's blinding me. Cover it.
He tapes Seamus the dog to it.
Yeah, it's
leaves the dog there. And then later on tells the story, oh, our dog just loved being in front of that very hot bulb.
This light bulb is obviously too bright. What can I do? Use the dog as a shield for the light. That's a good idea.
Yeah,
that's
what Perrine said. I mean, Alex Perrine at Salon is the only one, and how many times have we had this conversation, where I've said I'm completely baffled, I'm stymied as to how to put into words what makes Mitt Romney so weird. And the person who's done the best at it is Perrine over at Salon. He wrote an entire, like, sort of mini ebook about it. But one of the things that he says, he's like he does these odd things, and then he tells these stories that are really kind of horrifying and kind of crazy, but he tells it as if they're fun little, you know, these sincere little endearing tales about himself. Like, oh, yeah, really? Like, oh, I put the dog on the roof of the car. How about that?
It was completely airtight.
Yeah, I mean, just thoroughly crazy. If I didn't know any better, I would say he was a serial killer.
What's Iran going to do? And now Israel's going to fire missiles at Iran? I don't know. What should I do?
Put a giant piece of tinfoil in between.
Put a giant piece of tinfoil in between the two countries.
Duct tape it.
Why, that's a swell idea.
Yeah, exactly. Swell. He just is the worst possible candidate. He is the a thoroughly backward candidate.
I got to tell you.
But in some ways, you know what, I take it back. Because in some ways, for the way the Republican Party thinks right now, the sort of regressive way that they think, he really in some ways is while he's a terrible candidate when it comes to how most of the world would see him and how most of America would see him because of, you know, he's this, like you said, Thurston Howell III meets Gordon Gekko. I think he sums up almost flawlessly the sort of Republican mindset. They want Ward Cleaver. They want this right out of the 1950s, doesn't swear, white guy, you know, flawless little family. He's perfect in that respect.
Good Lord, is he Ward Cleaver? That's another good one. It's a guy. No, he's a guy. He's a space alien doing an imitation of Ward Cleaver.
Right. That's it. He's not even really Ward Cleaver. He is. There's something odd about him. I'm not sure whether it was Perrine who said it, but somebody I think said this, and it might have been referring to Romney. This is one of the problems. You read so much crap during the week that it's like, okay, I don't know who the hell said what. But I think somebody described him. It might have been Perrine who described him as sort of not even like David Lynch weird, but like first act of Blue Velvet weird. Before you started realizing that there was something really filthy underneath the shiny veneer of suburbia. He's the top layer.
That's right. One last break. Back after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Yeah, after the 1992 election cycle, I never wanted to hear this song ever again.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite albums of all time.
I mean,
this is my least favorite song on that album.
Yeah, I mean, I love Fleetwood Mac, but boy, was that... I mean, I followed very closely that 1992 election, as with all subsequent elections. And I got so sick of hearing that, even though I was a very staunch Bill Clinton supporter. And I was kind of, when they played it again last night, as Bill Clinton walked out onto the stage at the DNC, I got chills. I have to admit. I mean, I thought that was, I was about to watch, and we were all about to watch Joe DiMaggio hit safely in his 56th consecutive game. I mean, that's the kind of masterful performance we knew we were going to get to see. Right. And then when he came out, I mean, it was so good that Alex Castellanos, who is the inventor of the White Hands, Jesse Helms, White Hands anti-affirmative action ad. I mean, super far right Republican analyst for CNN says, you know what? This election's over. Barack Obama's basically won this thing based on Clinton's speech alone. Alex Castellanos said this was a Hall of Fame pitcher throwing a strike like a perfect game from center field.
It's funny, the sports metaphor that I used when it comes to how the Democrats are, and you wrote about this perfectly, about how they sort of found their backbone. And I did the same thing, but I think that you went into a lot more detail than I did, and I sort of stayed a little bit more above the fray. You got much more excited about it, which, by the way, I think is very fair. But the sports metaphor that I used is so far all this week, the Democrats have been Ali versus the Republicans Liston. I mean, just pummeling the crap out of them.
Harlem Globetrotters versus the Washington Generals.
Just beating the crap out of them. I mean, everything has been on point. And this is you know, this is not even from an ideological perspective, but from a sheerly professional perspective, who's playing the game better? And that was the piece that I wrote initially after the first night of the convention, was I was taken aback because for so long the Democrats had been the lovable losers. You know, with the exception of that one small era where, you know, obviously you had a booming economy and you had Bill Clinton, and that was sort of a perfect storm that kind of swept everything out of its way. The Democrats have never been able to sort of get on message, stay on point, and make that message feel like destiny, like American yeah. destiny. Yeah. They've, you know, they've really grabbed the sort of mantle of we are patriotism, and we're not going to allow it to be co-opted by or monopolized, actually, by the Republicans. I mean, and it's really been a sight to behold.
The Democrats had always been a victim of bringing a. Bringing a knife fight to a gun, or a knife to a gunfight.
Knife to a gunfight, yeah.
Knife to a gunfight. And you know what Bill Clinton did last night? Bill
he
Clinton.
Brought a howitzer.
He brought a howitzer. And it was 49 minutes of just utter pummeling of the Republicans. I mean, Steve Schmidt, who was John McCain's campaign manager, is now an analyst for MSNBC. He's sort of the token Republican now on the panel for their coverage. And he basically said after that speech last night, he said, we don't have anyone like that. You know, I envy you guys. We don't have someone who can come out and deliver a speech like that.
They I mean, when you think about the fact, it when you really sort of put it in this perspective, it is staggering. It's mind-boggling. They brought out last night the last Democratic president, and the Republicans ignored completely the last 8-year Republican president and his entire administration, essentially, with the exception of Condi Rice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, in fact, on Twitter, I posted George W. Bush's comments that were buried within a video that was played in the middle of the afternoon during the RNC, in which, you know, George W. Bush delivers his remarks on Mitt Romney. I mean, it's just like, he's a good man. He's going to be a great president. And that was the extent of George W. Bush's remarks about the Republican nominee. Bill Clinton, on the other hand, if there hadn't been a constitutional amendment banning multiple terms for the presidency, it's very likely Bill Clinton, if he had wanted the job, would still be president today.
Oh, I'd vote for him again. You kidding me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Holy crap. I watched him there last night. I'm like, dear God, bring back Bill.
I mean, it was fantastic. And, you know, one of the things that struck me most about this speech was the Obama team in the Obama administration has always had a problem. This is one of my big gripes about the Obama administration, is they have had such a hard time successfully pitching their own wins, their own accomplishments. And Bill Clinton went out there and for 50 minutes not only endorsed the president and outlined why this guy is a great president, but educated the Obama campaign in terms of how to actually pitch and deliver their successes. Say, this is how you relate your wins to the American people. And I hope to God they were watching and paying attention. Because, you know, I mean, let there be no doubt that I am a strong admirer of the president. And I think they have done a significantly good job considering all of the crap that they were dealt when they came in. But they've failed to say, look at where we were and look where we are now. Things are way better because of the things we did until this week and reaching sort of a climax with Bill Clinton. Snitter, you know, snicker, snicker. I said climax and Bill Clinton in the same sentence. But it's about damn time that happened. And so, you know, hopefully we'll see a lot more of that sort of thing. Hopefully they'll be excerpting a lot of that speech and use it ads and things like that. Same with Deval Patrick. I mean, we played Deval Patrick at the top of the show. And I think that line kind of is kind of the most descriptive encapsulation of the Democratic National Convention this year. The Democrats have found their backbone. In fact, you know, the line actually might have been a little late, because he was talking about the Deval Patrick was about Democrats finding their backbone. Well, they already have.
Yeah, no,
evidently. Hopefully they can hang on to it.
because the risk now is slipping back.
No, it seems like they're starting to at least get an idea that, you know, get some fight in them. And yeah, you're right. I'm hoping that sticks around. By the way, congratulations, because you're on Huffington Post right now, and Patton Oswalt is right above you. So,
oh yeah, I thought that was
you
cool.
Should be on.
Yeah, yeah. Who has more comments? Do I have more comments?
I didn't even look.
Let me see. I was comparing.
I love Patton. Patton's
great. Yeah. Patton's got, as of this moment, at 7 o'clock Eastern, Patton Oswalt has 142 comments. I have 352. Ha ha.
Excellent.
It's such a
BS cool
way. Yeah, I don't really give a crap. So there were a number of things. This was shocking. When I saw this piece of crap on the Associated Press, I said, how do editors let this slip through and become part of a fact-checking story about a speech?
Right.
Matt Apuzzo from the AP, or
yeah,
Apuzzo,
I was going to say, I know where you're going with this.
Yeah. Wrote up a fact check article about President Clinton's speech. And some of the things I think were fair to say. But he wraps up with this. He quotes Bill Clinton saying, "Their campaign pollster said, we're not going to let our campaign be dictated by fact checkers. Now, that is true. I couldn't have said it better myself. I just hope you remember that every time you see the ad." So it's basically Bill Clinton kind of teasing the Romney campaign for ignoring fact checkers.
Yeah. But then what you have is this guy impugning Clinton's character because of the fact that Clinton went, you know, lied his ass off at one point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one thing doesn't have anything to do with the other.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, the facts here, as written by Matt Apuzzo from the AP, says Clinton, who famously finger-wagged a denial on national television about his sexual relationship with intern Monica Lewinsky and was subsequently impeached in the House on a perjury charge, has had his own uncomfortable moments over telling the truth. Quote, "I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky," Clinton told television viewers. Later, after he was forced to testify to a grand jury, Clinton said his statements were, quote, "legally accurate," but also allowed that he, quote, "misled people, including even my wife," unquote. That is right. that has nothing to do with ignoring fact checkers.
Right. Well, that because you lied once, you're untrustworthy across the board.
Well, it's not even that. I mean, the remark was about how the Romney campaign is so brazen, so fast and loose with reality, that they have repeatedly ignored one fact checker after another. At the point that Clinton said that about Monica Lewinsky, there was no fact checker saying, well, you know what? What he just said about I did not have sexual relations with that woman, that's not true, because he actually did. And here's why. Here's evidence. There was none of that. So to say that Bill Clinton is not capable of correcting the Romney campaign for their ignorance of every fact checker, I mean, it's been universally debunked, the things the Romney campaign has been saying about Medicare and about welfare reform and on down the line. You cannot say that Bill Clinton's Monica, I mean, to bring up Monica Lewinsky, for God's sake.
Yeah, in case everyone's forgotten.
Yeah. Well, because that has nothing to do with making Clinton's statement a false statement. There was nothing that Clinton said that was empirically false. So it's just saying, oh, you know, by the way, Clinton lied about having a BJ from an intern at the White House. That has nothing to do with the Romney campaign, and least of all the Romney campaign's mendacity. So this is your liberal media. I mean, let there be no doubt how liberal the press obviously is. It's just unbelievable. This is how, and this is what we kind of thought would happen when we were talking about Paul Ryan's speech last week, which, believe it or not, it was only last week. Seems like ages ago. But we said, you know, wait until next week when the press bends over backwards to find factually inaccurate things in the Democratic speeches.
Mm.
And this is a great example of that. This is the press digging and digging and coming up short.
Yeah, well, they have to come up with something to appear objective.
Right. Meanwhile, you're not hearing anything about today. Well, I guess there was something on Huffington Post. But speaking of Paul Ryan, requested Obamacare money for a health care center. Unbelievable. Again, a guy comes out and uses this legislation, you know, to claim that the Obama campaign is resorting to socialism and a government takeover of health care. This guy goes hat in hand to the Obama HHS, says, hey, can I have a bunch of money for Racine? Big health center, the Bell City Neighborhood Health Center. Needs some money. Naturally, this is a part of a fund that comes from the Affordable Care Act. And a piece of legislation, by the way, that was proposed by Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, the only admitted socialist in the United States Senate. And Paul Ryan's getting a chunk of Bernie Sanders money from the Affordable Care Act, which is heretofore a government takeover of healthcare from big spending socialist Democrats. Good Lord.
Oh, the hypocrisy.
Right on the heels. I mean, but you know what? It's a, to me, the hypocrisy is, I mean, we throw that term around a lot, and it's an, obviously an appropriate description. But we rarely talk about the importance of the hypocrisy. And the importance of the hypocrisy is to illustrate as often as we can the reality that the Republican Party really has no core values anymore.
Right.
And so if you believe that the Republican Party is going to somehow reflect your values, you're sadly mistaken. The Republican Party is going to do whatever it can to perpetuate its own career. I'm talking about individual politician careers, to hand over money to its, you know, its corporate donors, and in a variety of ways, one of which is subsidies, the other way is defense contracting in wartime. I mean, it's become an entire, I mean, from top to bottom, the Republican Party has become a business model more than anything else.
Did you see Ryan's comment? I mean, in addition to the marathon comment, where he ran a marathon in an impossible amount of time, unless he was the Flash.
Yeah.
Did you see Ryan's comment about how he supposedly has made close to 40 climbs of Colorado's 14,000 foot peaks? Did you hear that? He was talking about mountain climbing.
Oh, my God. Did he also say he was bionic?
Well, that's the thing that I did. I put it up. I put it up on the blog, and my comment was, you know, fun little game. And this is what we should do now: take that old like Chuck Norris facts meme and swap out Norris's name for Paul Ryan. So you get, you know, you get like, if you can see Paul Ryan, he can. If you can see Paul Ryan, he can see you. If you can't see Paul Ryan, you may be only seconds away from death.
Paul Ryan
can slam revolving doors.
Yeah. Paul Ryan doesn't do push-ups. He pushes the earth down.
Right, exactly. Paul Ryan once visited the Virgin Islands. They are now just the islands.
Well, hey, we have a lot of additional political things to talk about, so I think we'll bump those over into the after party. If you haven't subscribed to the after party, go to bobsesca.com. Click the after party link at the top. And all you got to do is put in your PayPal information, and we take it from there. It's $6 a month. You get all of our unfiltered, uncensored, and probably a little too honest reactions to things happening in pop culture, our personal lives, and politics. And we're going to be doing more politics than usual, I imagine, this week. So this week's After Party will be premiering, as always, at about noon Eastern on Fridays. So tomorrow, Friday, brand new show. So make sure to sign up for the after party. We're going to be talking about Republicans and civility. I want to talk about an article I read. It was actually an interview between John Cusack and Jonathan Turley. We talked about that on the after party, because that was a doozy. Where I really want to get into that. And a lot more. We got a lot more, some pop culture topics to talk about, including a list of our favorite TV shows of all time. Talking about that.
We're doing that today.
Yeah, I think so. We'll try to do it.
We'll try to do it. We were supposed to do it last week, and we didn't get to it. Also on the after party, some sex toy news. We're talking about that on the after party. So let's just put it this way. Some sex toy facts and figures from the fine folks at Adam and Eve. Hitting the hard topics this week, huh? Well, hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. We'll see you on the after party.